You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call back? I called back.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standick here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. This is the carpool Wizard Oki version because I just watched a Wizards game with various Wizard interested folks, including friend of the podcast, Adam Rubin, a.k.a. Liddell's Plays on Twitter. And I'm driving him home, and I told him if I'm coming out, we're doing a podcast, but for logistics purposes, we're just going to do it now because, you know, it's getting late. But you don't care about that. What you care about is what do we think about that Wizards game, Adam. First of all, Adam, how are you doing? That was a very intense game on a lot of levels. There was the fight between Bradley Beal and Draymond Green. I say fight in air quotes. There was so many interesting plays late. The Warriors took the lead. The Wizards almost came back, but not quite. The headshots late. Where are you right now? You need, like, a sedative? You need a stiff drink? Like, where are you at?
Well, I didn't think that they could top the Lakers game, so I was happy it was an exciting game. I've come down a little bit since the end of the game, so I was at a high towards the end, peaked when Wall stepped back for that three, and then I've just sort of crashed since then.
At the end of the year, I'm sure there'll be a better Wizards game because there'll be one like that where they win. But like in terms of like excitement level, that's the game will be on one end of the spectrum, and the Lakers game may be on the complete bottom of the other. That's just complete bore fests. Especially relative to the hype. There was no issue with that here. Look, before we go big picture, I guess let's talk a little bit about the game. I guess we can just go from the start. The Wizards, unlike this year, they have not had a complete game yet. Like, to me, they haven't had enough games where they looked sharp, focused, intense, whatever you want to term you use, throughout. This was as close as they came. It started early on. Kelly Oubre was making a bunch of shots early. The starters as a whole were setting the tone that they were out there both on both ends of the court. So I think early on, and they got up to a double-digit lead. Well, that came in the second quarter, I guess. But that start, I think, sort of set the tone for the game, and they were able to keep it up for the most part.
Well, I think, the shooting was incredible. So when the combination of Washington's making their threes and Golden State's missing their threes, so...
Yeah, they were 11 for 18 from three in the first half. Oubre was hitting all over the place. And, this was not a Golden State. This was not a great Golden State performance overall. This was not Wizards at their best. Let me back it up here. I just realized I am sleeping, I guess, on the big story, right? The bigger story was the fight.
The great bear hug of 2017.
Right. Because there was a lot of issues with that. One, what happened? Two, what did it mean for the game? And three, what does it mean going forward? In the moment, you've seen the highlight by now, so you don't need me to sort of go through it all. The question, I guess, will be, did Beal, when he goes to wrap his arm around Draymond and he gets him up by the head, it didn't look to me like he threw a punch, but his hand did land in his face.
Right. There was contact to the head.
Yeah. And so the question is, what Draymond, a shove, the sort of the elbow to Beal's gut, was that over the line, too much, and Beal reaction? In the moment, they tussle. More, the right in front of the Wizards bench, they all come out. Oh, well, I shouldn't say they all. A few of them came out. We'll come back to that in a second. The guy who is one of their security members, who's John Wall's pal, goes by Flav. He gets out there. When he sort of gets into they're trying to break them up a little bit. It looked like from the angle we saw, sort of his momentum helped sort of knock them over. So it went from them sort of bear hugging each other to now this thing on the floor. And now when it hits the floor, Kelly Oubre is coming over. Some people think he was throwing some punches. Maybe wanted to hit Wall. Markieff Morris, you were noticing, came way out there multiple times to be part of it. And it completely changed the tone of the game at a point where the Wizards were about 50 seconds away going into halftime, feeling really good about themselves, up about 14, 16 points. They were really controlling the game, and that really turned the focus from the Wizards winning to, oh, snap, something just happened.
Yeah, it looked like most of the players involved, it was more grabbing and trying to separate people as opposed to punches thrown. I've seen on Twitter some statements that Oubre had thrown a punch. I didn't see it on the the replay. So I think everyone will survive a suspension who was involved in the scuffle. There might be issues with the people leaving Washington's bench, but I guess, it changed the game. It changed the tone of the game. Now, of course, I believe it was Durant came down and hit a three right after that, but Wall ended the half hitting a three, which was a big shot to sort of put him back up 14, I guess, at the time. But it's unfortunate because you have to imagine they were on their way to putting together a complete game, or at least a chance of putting together a nice complete game. As Ben is avoiding pedestrians in the middle of the street here, that's why we had some silence for a second. I didn't know if I was going to have to testify in a manslaughter, particular manslaughter case.
Hey, I was giving them the right.
I saw nothing. I don't know. The whole thing was bizarre because it really was just a bear hug situation, a standing bear hug transitioning into a full embrace on the ground. No punches were thrown because it was sort of a hockey fight when you get the jersey over the head type thing. They couldn't, their arms weren't free to throw any punches.
In fairness to Draymond, I mean, he's obviously a very intense player. Beal's arms did come up, like, it came from behind. And so it hits him in the head. He doesn't necessarily know in the moment what happened. He reacts to it. Now, again, I'm not saying that Beal should get a 10-game suspension or that Draymond, who later was just continually irate when he was getting thrown out, they both did. I'm not saying he wasn't overreacting to some degree, but I'm just saying I sort of can understand from his perspective when you're getting hit from behind in the face. His quote that he made to an ESPN reporter during the game, like he's just he has no issue with Beal. He has an issue with the league. He's getting singled out. I mean, that's a bit much. He gets singled out because he keeps putting himself in these positions.
Well, I'll call your defense of Draymond Green nonsense. Giving him fairness of benefit of the doubt. Beal's hand hit him in the face from behind. And then his quote is, what else am I supposed to do? What else am I supposed to do other than just bear hug a guy?
I'm not saying what happened after that. In terms of Draymond turning on Beal.
It wasn't a big deal is what I'm saying. Yes, his hand was up in his face area, but yes, there's no need.
I understand why Draymond angry.
No, but angry maybe you can say, hey, I'd like him to move his hand away from my face, but that's the extent of it. You go down court. That people get wrapped up like that, you know, all the time. So that was not something that warranted any type of response from Draymond. He could have walked right back down the court. Nothing needed to be done. That's why you have me on the podcast.
Right.
I'm giving you a different point of view.
Look, you know, we have different codes of the street, I guess. I'm just saying, if hand to the face coming from behind and you're a hothead like Draymond, I'm not surprised that he did what he did. But in any event, what it did for the game was they both got ejected. And I told you, you and I were watching the game. We got there a little earlier to watch some of the World Series. And I said to you that I think that when you look at Golden State, if you could sort of take one of them off the court, I said it would be Draymond Green, because while the other three guys are good, and in the case of Durant and Curry, probably better players, what they do is somewhat replaceable. I mean, shooting the open three, Draymond, the Swiss Army knife of it all, rebounds, assists, he's blocking Gortat inside, he's leading the break. That's harder. But I'm talking in a general sense, a trade-off of Green with Beal is not ideal for the Wizards. Especially without Markieff Morris already, they just don't have enough guys. So that was ultimately a bad trade-off there. Now, the Wizards held on to a double-digit lead pretty much the whole third quarter. It got down to, I think, 10 going into the fourth, sort of slow chip away. And the Wizards kept John Wall on the bench for the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, which to me seemed just a long time, especially with no Beal. Now, Otto did a decent job of sort of taking control, and Oubre was making some plays. But that to me was sort of an interesting point in the game. If we're all about Wolf season, if the whole point of Wolf season is to be out there, to do what you have to do, all that, I don't quite get why John Wall's not out there with the Wizards clinging to a lead in the fourth quarter with no Beal. I thought that was an interesting decision.
Well, he jumped up from the bench, I think about a minute before he got in the game. He was waiting to get in. And that's one of the stretches where I thought Brooks could have called a timeout earlier and could have bought some time and got Wall into the game before 5 minutes going by. But it goes both ways, because when Wall came back in,
He made some nice plays at the end, those two driving layups, but he also was pressing a little bit. He took a couple bad shots. He took a jumper, a three-pointer he didn't need to take when the shot clock was running down because, you know, Gortat, there was miscommunication on setting a pick, so Wall just went ahead and took a three. They were holding the lead, or at least not hemorrhaging the lead completely, so I guess I understand Brooks thinking that maybe Wall can't handle, after playing the whole third quarter, I believe he did. I guess he didn't want to put Wall in for the 10.5 minutes to close out the fourth. I mean, I guess I can understand where he's coming from there, I guess.
From where we were, I wasn't keeping track of timeouts, but you made a point at some point, like, you know what, you just got to use these timeouts for rest more than you do for, you know, even like momentum. And I don't know, I guess I just would, unless I'm missing, I don't think they had two timeouts, I think they had more than that. I would have just tried to figure out a way to keep him on the court, keep him fresh, you know, pick your moments. But, okay, you know, the end result was that the I can't say they held the lead. I mean, they did keep chipping away. They just weren't losing at that point. I think the loss of the lead came after Wall. Yeah. Not to say it was him. I'm just saying, it became a point where the dam was breaking, and, you know, you kind of just knew where things were headed. Let's get to just the last couple minutes, and then we'll get to some other stuff here with this game. But there was a point where John Wall wasn't – where Otto was the one making plays. John was not as putting the stamp on the game, so to speak. Then he goes to the basket a couple of times really nicely, gets the lead. The Golden State that was beating the Wizards to the basket was Kevon Looney, one of their big men that you used to fill in against the with Draymond out. The Wizards couldn't quite – contain him, which is a weird statement to say, but Meeks hits a big three. They're down one. They get the ball with about 10 seconds to go. Durant hit a couple free throws. They get the ball back with like 10 seconds to go. They get a 3-point shot off to Wall. It looked like maybe Otto had a better look. Then it looked like Wall had a better look before he pumped, but he missed. They get the ball back. Couldn't really get off a good shot. Jody Meeks sort of did. And they missed the game. Any, I'm just rambling through this game now. Any part of that last sequence to you? Any form of it that you recall being particularly interesting?
Well, I thought definitely I would have liked to have seen Otto when he came off the dribble. He had a shot he could have put up, especially having, you know, made 7 threes. I would have liked to have seen him put it up over Durant instead of Wall, but it's fine. He made the right pass to Wall. I would have liked to have seen someone else other than Mike Scott inbounding the ball at the end. He just seemed to hesitate and doesn't seem to me to be like the best passer. I sort of like to have the best guy out inbounding when there's 1.1 seconds left. I think the inbounder is the most important person on the court.
Well, you know, it's funny because the last game against the Lakers, you know, when everybody's talking about the John Wall last second decision to shoot the three, let's not forget Kelly Oubre threw the ball into him. I'm not saying that was the best move. I'm saying it felt weird that Oubre was the one throwing it in, but Otto was out, and that was something I thought about going into this game, so it's interesting you're talking about that type of play again. Oh, by the way, speaking of that.
I don't know, yeah.
The Wizards had the ball.
Yeah, six people.
So. Yeah, the six people, they call timeout, they're down three.
Drew up a play, spent the whole,
right.
Everyone in the huddle was watching the play being drawn up.
Right, and they're walking out of the court, and you look at them, you're like, wait a minute, who's out here? Because like, you're like, well, this guy's out here and this guy's out here. Basically, they pulled Oubre off while he was on the court, which in and of itself I thought was interesting because it felt like this was, and I'll come back to him and Oubre in a second, but Oubre had been making threes. He's having a pretty good game. He certainly has tons of energy. He's also a bit kooky at times, and maybe you're just like, oh, I don't know about him in the last couple seconds, and you want Mike Scott. I thought it was just interesting that he's the one that got pulled. I kind of thought you would have stayed with him, especially just the way he'd been making threes tonight.
Yeah, I guess.
At least in the first half.
I guess it was Mike Scott versus Oubre, I guess, was the question of who would be on the court because they wanted Gortat, and he had actually, on that play, on the inbounds, he had a great pick, sort of like a Nene pick where he just, it wasn't legal, but, you know, they're not going to call it, so he just took out, you know, two guys to free up Otto. So you wanted to have Gortat on the court just to free things up, and I guess Oubre sat there while the play was being drawn up, and he thought the Mike Scott play was him, and so he just went out there and went out there when the whistle blew. But I would take Oubre over Mike Scott at that point, just because Mike Scott, Oubre was in rhythm and making threes. But you know, I guess that's.
I mean, Mike Scott can make a three, but yeah. Just at this point, you needed a three, and I don't have the final stats in front of me. I know Oubre started 4 for 4, definitely got quieter as the game went along, but you know, it still seemed like it. In any event. the Wizards lose 120-117. That means they're now 1-2 on this road trip. There's one game left Sunday in Sacramento. We'll see who's suspended or not. Now, we mentioned the Bradley Beal situation. I mentioned Markieff Morris, who's still hurt, obviously. He came off the bench. Carrick Felix was way off the bench.
Your
at
man,
one point.
Carrick Felix.
Yes, my guy, Carrick Felix. So I don't know. You know, none of them – well, Felix didn't get into the scrum, but he was so far off the bench.
It's an automatic suspension.
Right. So that seems like he would be off. Now, granted, he hasn't – I don't think he's played a real minute this year. So, but that said, if Bradley Beal doesn't play, if he's suspended, if that comes down quick – you know, the Wizards will be in something of an all-hands-on-deck situation. So that'll be interesting. And if you don't have Beal, you know, Sacramento's a team that doesn't have, you know, a great star, but I watched them play the other night against the Pelicans, and they're going like 9, 10 deep. They've got like everybody's averaging from like, you know, 13 points a game to like 8 points a game. Garrett Temple's one of those guys. Scalabissier, he's making plays.
Well, you also got George Hill and Fox in the backcourt, and that's a formidable backcourt if you're, you know, you like to have Beal and Wall going against them.
So anyway, you win in Sacramento, you close this thing up at 2-2. You know, all things considered, you take it. Right? You know, Denver's a good win, so on. So you take it, you move on. But to, you know, lose to Sacramento is in play, at least if Beal is out. Otherwise, you would think that the Wizards would get this done as long as they keep the focus they had in this game and don't revert back to the team that looked lethargic against the Lakers.
Well, certainly if they leave, again, we're looking ahead, and if you assume a win against Sacramento, if they do come home 2-2 with the only two losses being the Lakers and Golden State, two games that they very well should have won and lost big leads, but that's not necessarily a bad place to be. There certainly would be holes, things that need to be fixed, but you would be okay, I think, coming back 2-2 with those two types of losses.
Yeah, I would agree. Now, let's get to some bigger picture stuff here. And, you know, I don't believe in moral victories at the professional level, and so we're not going to go there. At the end of the day, this is another game in which the Wizards have blown a big lead. This is basically, I think, in every game they've had a double-digit lead. Denver, when I'm sort of blanking on, but I think that's right.
Yeah.
And I say blow the lead, even if they didn't maybe lose it all of it, it got down to where, you know, it's a final possession type situation. So that's a trend that continues, and just because it's Golden State, it's something to keep an eye on. That said, there were two things I thought about this game that, to me, if you want to look up as the Wizards as an NBA contender, two things that stood out to me why I think you can do that for sure. One, we mentioned Otto Porter. I mean, he's making shots all over the place, and he wasn't just getting set up by John Wall. He's driving. He's making plays in transition. He had a point there in the fourth quarter where he hit two threes in a row, and it was like if Golden State had done that, the roof would be blowing off. That people are going crazy. Like Durant, Otto did it, and you know it's on the road. It was really impressive to see him take control. Like you said, maybe he might have been the best player in the game today. He at least, at the worst, he was a guy that you could say if you're the Wizards, you know what, even with Beal on the court and just Wall, he's somebody that can take more control of this game. We weren't saying that about Otto last year. That was the big question. Was Otto going to go next level where he could get his own, take more control of the game? I'm not putting him, you know, again, it's all relative. Not saying he's Kevin Durant, but he went next level to me tonight on that front. In the biggest spot, and that's a big sign for me.
Yeah, I think if you look at Otto showing that he can be more than just the a third wheel, he can carry the offense. That's what they need for the second unit. That's their big issue. And I think piggybacking on that, Oubre showed that he can be a 25 to 30 minute guy and be in your top seven rotation. There's still a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde and Oubre where he made a couple dumb mistakes. He had a couple great plays. One play on defense against Durant at the end underneath where he stripped him, then got the ball free. But on one of those Kevin Looney dunks, fast break dunks, that it happened because Oubre went for a steal in the backcourt for no reason, was completely out of position. So when they broke the press, they got a dunk. And it's those little things where he has to maintain his composure over the entire 48 minutes.
Let's not forget the worst play of the game.
Well, okay.
The Warriors had like two or three shots at a three. The Wizards, he gets the rebound, Oubre, and, you know, the Wizards are up at this point, you know, had a chance to build on the lead some more, and he inexplicably throws the ball into like double coverage Golden State picked it up and scored. That was a terrible play. But through three quarters, I mean, this was like, to use a Twitter meme kind of thing, it felt like this was going to be the game where Kelly Oubre became president.
Well, I would also, since you're picking out his worst play, I would say what would be one of the greatest plays I've seen, if it had been completed, was after Curry got the rebound when Golden State was up one, and he used all 7'2" of his wingspan to swipe it from Curry. He just missed getting the recovery, but he was about to inches from stealing it and dunking to give Washington the 2-point lead. So little things like that where it wasn't a completed play, but you can see that was, you know, he was sort of on the cusp of an incredible play right there. So that's a situation where he's capable of such highs and
but even that, like, lows. But he did, like, well, like, he made, like, we don't have to look at this game and think, well, he almost did stuff. He was doing stuff through three quarters. I mean, he was making threes all over the place. There was a point, it felt in the second quarter, where the bench is in, it's basically Oubre and four guys coming off the bench, and you're like, oh boy, here's, the wheels are about to fall off. And they gave the starters real time, and it felt like Oubre's presence, confidence that he was, you know, look, he makes mistakes, but like, it just felt like, similar to how we're saying with Otto, that Otto was able to sort of take control of the game a little bit. It felt like Oubre was able to a little bit as well. And mind you, whenever Golden State is playing, some combination, especially in the first half, you had of Durant and Curry and Clay and Draymond were on the court. So when the Wizards are going Oubre and four bench guys, they're not out there against five guys named Mo. And the Wizards kept the lead, and I thought that Oubre did a good job. He kept it up a little into the third. Again, I don't have the stats in front of me. The fourth quarter, though, you know, I don't know if the game got a little too big for him, but we, his reaction to the Beal and Draymond fight incident, you know, he's going in there, whether he technically threw a punch or not, he clearly went in there with some aggressive intentions as opposed to just trying to be a peacemaker. You mentioned one of those plays where he's going for a steal. You know, he still makes so many of these youthful mistakes. But again, for me, the bigger takeaway is it's a game where he shows you, at the level he's getting to a little more consistently, is what the Wizards need if they really want to think about winning like 55 games this year.
Yeah, he's 21, right? So I believe, and you have to look at the cap situation Washington has. They don't have the money to go out and get another player. They don't have many assets they can do to pick up a mid-season player like a Markieff Morris like they normally do. So really, Oubre is the internal development they need to add a rotation guy. Otto improved, but he was already a rotation guy. Oubre is the guy who needs to become a 25 to 30 minute rotation guy, and so far this season and this game, that's what he's becoming. So that's what I think what you're saying in terms of the big takeaways of Otto being that third guy and Oubre now being a rotation guy. And those were the question marks coming into the season because the improvement had to come from within. Internally, they needed to create an 8-man rotation, which they didn't have last season. So the fact that with Bogdanovich gone, the fact that Oubre can play that role and Otto can be a three in a big three, which you don't like to use that term, but he can be that third scorer, you know, those are the big takeaways for me.
But like, even beyond like the fact that you could have like a guy you could play, it's that Oubre, you know, my take on Oubre has always been Otto is the better player. 2 years ago, people were trying to tell me Oubre should have been starting. I was like, stop. Last year, people were trying to tell me Oubre should be starting. I was like, stop. If you told me that today, I would tell you to stop. But with Oubre, with his crazy length and athleticism, the sky is the limit to a degree. I don't think, you know, he's going to have to improve his instincts by a million to be a true, like, all-star or anything like that. But his potential, like, and just the fact that he can guard so many different people. If he can hit, I don't know where he's at. I think he's about 35% on three coming in. Again, he started 4 for 4. If he's hitting, I said if he hit 33% this year, that'd be a win. You'd say if he's hitting 35 or higher, that's pretty crazy. You can use him a lot more than you did a year ago in a lot more spots. So, again, it's game five. We're not going to go overboard on anything. But the fact that Otto did what he did and Oubre what he did was good. One last thing, and then I'm going to let Adam go live life here and go to sleep. I feel like I have to keep reminding myself this, so I'll do it to you guys as well. When you're watching the second unit and you're like, oh boy, what's going on here? Remember, Markieff Morris is not playing. He's a guy that played the second unit a bunch last year. If Oubre is playing at this level and you have Markieff out there as the four, the five, and Jody Meeks is hitting threes the way he is, you know, even if they're still sorting out what to make of Tim Frazier, it's been a little bumpy for sure, in some spots, and Mahimi has not looked good at all. But Mike Scott's been solid enough, and if you have Oubre, Mahimi, I'm sorry, Oubre, Morris, Meeks, Scott. I didn't mention Jason Smith, who didn't play tonight, but Jason Smith is obviously a guy.
Right.
You know, that's more than they had a year ago by a lot. Now, again, you got to figure out sort out some other things, and we'll see if Scott Brooks is willing to sit Mahimi if it doesn't get better and go with Smith, or when Morris gets back, just go small. But all that said, it's something to keep in mind that they're still missing 30 minutes of a guy who will help this second unit a lot.
Well, as you've said off the record, that you like to look at it as not so much the regular season, because it looks like Washington will make it to the playoffs. You're looking for what can happen in the playoffs. How can you get rotation guys? I would agree that if you can... Mahimi is a major question mark. I'm being polite in calling him a question mark. And the hope would be that Markieff could take some, if not all, of his minutes on the second unit. And, you know, you can play a little small. So I think when you throw Markieff in, then, yeah, they definitely have an 8- or 9-man rotation, which is much better. Even during the Bogdanovich time when they were sort of rolling, I think it's much better than they had last year. So, you know, it's a small picture, small sample size takeaway, but it's those issues are about as good as you could hope. Now, the one thing is, though, yes, they blew the lead to the Lakers, blew the lead to Golden State. If that was a small sample size, you'd say, okay, no big deal. But that is sort of the end game. Losing of late leads is something which is a continuation from last year. So it's nice to have a rotation and everything, but you still have to win the game. So that's an issue where if you really want to talk playoffs and what they could do eventually and what their ceiling is, that must change, because you don't win a 7-game series by blowing 1 or 2 games in the series. So that's one thing.
So that Boston series, I mean, of all the games that were lost at Game 1 and Game 2, they had those big leads early. Right, Game 1 maybe you can dismiss a little because Morris got hurt,
but
to lose those leads,
you can't lose both. Yeah,
yeah, you got to hold on to these things.
Exactly.
And last year we can blame the bench. That's totally fair in many ways. I wouldn't tonight. I mean, you know, again, they were shorthanded. They all, you know, but Meeks played well enough. Scott was reasonable. Yada yada yada. But anyway, it is what it is. I hate that term, especially in this case, because look, the Wizards. It was more than good job, good effort. I think by and large they played well. There's some things they needed to clean up late, and we can sort of point to each player other than maybe Otto and say they could have done this a little bit better. But regardless, it was fun, way better, way more entertaining than the Lakers game. Now one more game left on the road trip. Sacramento, same time as Redskins Dallas, by the way. That is some bad timing.
Sacramento is a 3.
I think the Sacramento game is like a 6 o'clock East Coast time. I think somebody told me. And the Redskins game goes at the 4:25. So that's bad timing for some coverage. I may have to TiVo something. And since I play at the Redskins game, I guess it won't be the Wizards.
No, same thing as Monday night. Same thing happened Monday night.
I'll be really excited when they're off this road trip. It's too early for me. Maybe it's not the players that's not too early for them. It's too early for me. It's been a long week, a long weekend already.
A long week, that is. 10:30 starts were tough, and especially with the Redskins on Monday night too, so that gave you three late nights.
Yeah, it's been a chore. All right, it's never a chore talking to you. Appreciate it, Mr. Rubin. Go follow him on Twitter at Liddell's Place. You can follow me at Ben Standig. Oh, and for those of you who I said this the other day, but we've now with the podcast they switched us from Audio Boom to Panoply. Hope it works out for the best. But if you're an RSS person, I put up the feed on the at Locked On Wizards podcast or tweet Twitter thing, so you can check it out there, or email me and I'll send it to you. All right, cool. Until next time, see ya.
Neal gets open for 3. Dagger!
Home drive, off balance.